Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and beer is the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading Douglas Adams' The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
But before we talk about what happens in the book, we definitely need some beer.
Before we talk about what happens, we need to drink about what happens. So, I was the piece of shit this week who didn't have any beers. You gentlemen brought these beers, and dramatically, magically,
without coordinating at all, almost the same thing.
But just different enough to make it amazing. So, what did you bring here?
All right, you go first.
I got the Abduction Raspberry Truffle beer, which is not words that I thought would ever go together in a sentence.
And I got Very Berry Abduction.
And these are both by the Pipeworks Brewing Company. I don't believe our first beer by them. I want to say Chicago? Yeah, Chicago. So
they've got very cool labels.
Oh, they have some great art. Oh, those are intense. Okay, so I'm going to give you Very Berry. Is that?
That is a vibrant shade of something.
Turd. And that is the other one. It's Very Berry. Oh, God.
Don't spill on the computer.
Yeah, I've lost two computers to that.
Jesus, dude.
It wasn't me.
You thought you would have learned it was the first.
It's two other people.
That first one's Very Berry. Okay, so these are Imperial Stouts with berries invading people and probing their anuses and stuff. There's a whole long fucking bunch of shit here, but they're just 10.5% alcohol Imperial Stouts. One has three different berries.
Good Lord.
And this other one...
Truffles.
Has raspberries, cacao, and vanilla. I've tried, actually, the Very Berry, just because it was a thing. At the store, and I was like, I need to know what that's
Holy
about.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. This is strong.
And that tastes like something. Oh, I have a clear winner in my mind. What do you guys think? Those are interesting beers, either one.
Interesting is the word I would use.
Mm-hmm.
If this is your scene, cool.
They're different. Because
they are different.
With these sort of big Imperial Stouts, the ingredient that's usually added is like vanilla bean, or coffee, or chocolate. Things that kind of
the raspberry really
add to the flavor that's already
kicks
there.
Kicks you in the dick.
Yeah, the berries are intense. Yeah.
This is the most berryful thing.
And it's not. And it's not sweet.
No,
it's very like it's sort of like sour raspberry
tart.
Mm-hmm. Sour berry flavor.
It's berry fruity. Yeah. Take that, dad jokes. Well, we've tried two. So we have the Very Berry, which is made with strawberry, blueberry, and raspberry. And then we have the Very Berry Abduction, which is a raspberry and a bunch of other... I'm sorry, the Raspberry Truffle, which is with raspberry, cacao, and vanilla. Do you notice the difference between the two?
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but... The first one's definitely more berry.
Yeah.
The second one is definitely...
Oh, it's very berry.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. They're both weird. They're both very raspberry.
It's a strong flavor.
Yeah, raspberry is a dominant flavor.
I mean, raspberry is a dominant flavor in whatever the fuck it's in.
That's a fair point. I've noticed that with beers. Strawberry is a terrible beer flavor.
Because it doesn't fucking belong in beer. It's strawberry.
Oh. Hey, what belongs in beer, man?
Not strawberry.
How do you know?
Not strawberry.
It's a different flavor. That's for sure.
Yes.
I've had only a couple of beers with strawberry, and none of them were very particularly successful, but you have to keep trying. You can't just say it's fine without them. A blueberry is also a flavor that just kind of like, eh. Is there a blueberry in that? Oh, there is? Yeah, I didn't notice it.
I had one that was like, oh shit, that's blueberry.
Well, yeah, there are a few that's like...
Someone with a dog and a raincoat on it.
I know exactly
it's
what you're talking about.
Your
main
beer?
Yeah.
Something point or something dog or...
Something paw, yeah. I know what you're saying. They also make a hazelnut porter.
Yeah, that tasted like a blueberry pie, the beer. Like, it's cool for like a few things, and then suddenly it's like, this is a little bit much.
The berry thing is weird, and it's also weird when it's combined with an Imperial Stout, which we've talked about in the past. Imperial Stouts are... inky, black,
mm-hmm, very dark,
malty as fuck beers that are just over the top in every quality. I think the berries are an interesting thing. I had the Very Berry Abduction, and I was disappointed with it when I first had it at the store. I saw it at the store, and I was like, this sounds like everything I want.
Do you like the berry beer?
I like the idea of it. And then you have it, and you're like, oh, that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
These two... For me, I much prefer the raspberry truffle. What do you guys think?
I kind of do. It's just a little bit less harsh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels a little bit less intense.
I think what helps is that it has more of a... is that umami? Is that like a savory quality to it? There's like a thickness
it's just
to
it. The other one is so raspberry tart.
Yeah.
This one, by comparison, is more like, oh, this is something I could drink. Maybe on its own, it'd be different.
Fair.
Maybe it's because we're drinking at the same time.
Well, it's kind of part of the fun, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they put these beers out at the same time, more or less.
That the same pitchers on them.
I mean, I think it's cool. I bet that there is also some other varieties out there of this.
Yeah.
That if we were really...
Part of a set.
Yeah, if we knew to look for it, we would have found them. We'll just drink those on our own. Oh, no. So we're talking about books, right? Aren't we done?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
What are books?
So we're 7 minutes in, and we're still just talking about the beer. All right, so here's why these beers matter to this book. So the story is about Arthur Dent, who is a regular...
The most British man in the world.
Most British man in the world, yeah. He's an earthling, definitely just a regular human. And he is basically the last human alive, second to last human alive, because his friend Ford Prefect invites him to the pub and says, yeah, the world is ending in 10 minutes. He goes, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, the world's ending in 10 minutes. No, not really. You can't be right. No, you better drink that pint pretty fast. And what happens is the Vogons are putting in an interspace bypass and have to demolish the Earth, which they do exactly 10 minutes later. Right. Arthur Dent is a regular human, but Ford Prefect is in fact an alien, and he's just been hiding on Earth, pretending to be a human for about 10 years. And so Arthur Dent is basically abducted onto an alien spaceship, and the Earth is completely blown up. And then Arthur Dent becomes basically the last human alive. And that's like page 7 of the book. And then a whole bunch of other weird ass shit happens after that. And it makes less, after that, it makes less sense.
Yeah, it doesn't really ever make sense again until, oh, it doesn't.
Book
it never
five.
Does.
No, it never does.
Whenever it's done, which
book
I've never, I actually stopped
trilogy.
Reading. Yeah, book 5 of the trilogy. Though there's also a book 6.
Is
which,
there?
Yeah, it's like based off of notes by the guy who died, book 6 of the trilogy, which is pretty awesome.
Children of Dune.
So it's a funny book. That's like a shtick, right?
It's a satire of science fiction. It's a parody of science fiction. You know, it has all this like really so funny like British humor, but also making fun of sort of this science fiction of the 60s and 70s.
It's like seeing
at the same time
how absurd you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great combination of the strands of science fiction, stupid bullshit, and British humor of the 70s, where the absurd Monty Python kind of stuff mixes really well with that. It's rather
just saying
clever.
Gibberish words and saying that that's science.
You know, it is kind of Monty Python in space.
Oh,
the whole book.
We can go on and on about the specifics, but yeah, it really is. I mean, the improbability thing with the whale and the fucking potted plant.
The ball of petunias.
Mm-hmm.
That's super absurd and Monty Python-esque. Though... The jokes are really funny, and we can talk about individual jokes throughout the book, though that would kind of ruin it for you. And we are not adverse to ruining books. I mean, Augustus dies, Frodo gives the ring into the volcano.
Who's Augustus?
the Fault in Our Stars.
Oh. Now I know.
The dinosaurs take over the island in Jurassic Park.
all of them. Every single time.
Yeah, Nedry dies. We will ruin any
Holden
book.
Doesn't catch anyone in the rye.
There isn't even any rye to speak of.
No. No, no, but the whole
I'm not even sure what that book
we're
is.
Still really
why
confused.
Is it called that?
It's
we're not going to go back.
Gonna,
no,
no,
sorry.
It's
listen
just,
to it's listen to episode 1.
Check us out on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you find your podcast.
Podcast.com.
Is that a thing?
I don't know.
DrunkGuysBookClub.com certainly is, though.
Yes, it is.
And it's certainly there.
You.
Yeah, we've ruined just about every book. Joseph Cavalier's brother dies.
No, shit.
Oh, he didn't even read that. Or does he?
Right, George dies.
Oh, George dies, yeah.
No.
Yeah, Lenny's a prick.
Lenny was a good dude.
No, it's the other way around.
Oh, yeah.
Lenny dies.
Lenny
oh,
dies.
No. I can never keep him straight.
We'll just keep you guessing. The Drunk Guys Book Club.
Too many
well,
characters.
They both die eventually.
Yeah, I mean...
That's true. All of life is meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Here on the Buddhist Drunk Guys Book Club, we are walking the Eightfold Path of Drunkenness. So the book is, going back to the Hitchhiker's Guide, I mean, the jokes are not worth giving away, because that's actually the entire point of reading the book.
Right. I mean, there is a little bit we'll end up talking about, I'm sure.
Of
but
course.
Most of it we'll try not to spoil all.
I mean, you couldn't really just retell them. They would be Not
we'd good. Just be reading the book to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't have British accents, so it would be harder for us to do that.
Much less classy.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, anyway, Arthur Dent, he is abducted and ends up on a spaceship, and he...
gets anal probed.
No, actually, he doesn't.
They're able to say that he doesn't.
Penile probed.
So, he and Ford Prefect, they are now...
He didn't say no.
No.
Testicularly probed.
Right? They are now hitchhikers, and their guide is, of course, this book that contains the... knowledge of everything in the universe,
almost. Like a really big Wikipedia book.
Yeah, it's basically Wikipedia before Wikipedia existed, and in ebook form before ebooks existed.
But it's also kind of, it's like a Baedeker, whatever the fuck it's called, like those like travel guidebooks, like, oh, you're backpacking through Europe books.
Yeah.
Okay, here's your backpacking through Europe
book. Like one from like Eurotrip and shit.
The Baedeker, but I don't know if I can say that word. But that's a thing, yeah, like Eurotrip, exactly. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, Bratislava, capital of Slovakia, and you made out with your sister. You know, like that kind of Eurotrip joke. Guys from Eurotrip, I know you're not working. Leave us 5 stars on iTunes.
Michelle Zuckerberg's probably still around.
Hopefully she has time to leave us a review.
Yeah.
Or follow us on Twitter.
I loved Harriet the Spy.
So yeah, anyway, and the point is that they're carrying this book that says that is, you know, how to get around in the universe when you're just hitchhiking. And one of the tips is, always know where your towel is, and don't panic.
Yeah, it's a weirdly vague bullshit.
Mm-hmm. And,
always carry a towel.
Right, yeah. and then a bunch of other really weird things happen. So, Arthur Dent is on a spaceship commanded by the Vogons, who are apparently the most...
Bureaucratic,
horribly bureaucratic race in the entire universe. We could get into them for a long time, but we probably won't.
The Germans.
And then they end up...
turds it together.
And they end up getting picked up in the spaceship called the Heart of Gold, commanded by the President of the Galaxy, the two-headed...
Beeblebrox.
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
I still can't say that motherfucker's name.
I think it's made to not be able to be said easily.
Yeah. The beers aren't helping.
No.
Because I'm on beer, too.
47.
I'm in base 26.
So, yeah, Zaphod. Anyway, so the book is a satire of science fiction. And here's one way. In science fiction, it's all about technology and how science, futuristic science and technology that's sort of invented by the author that can do things that we obviously can't. In Hitchhikers, Douglas Adams takes that idea to the most absurd level. Yes. Where the technology is sort of sounds like something in science fiction, but is deliberately ridiculous, deliberately nonsensical, and isn't and doesn't make any sense, but yet you're just supposed to go with it as if it makes sense, like in science fiction. Like, for instance, let's just say in a different science fiction something from the 60s and 70s, let's just call it Star Trek. There's all this like science terms that go with the warp drives that make everything work, and everything in all the technology is supposed to be based on science, even though it isn't. It's very ridiculous. So Douglas Adams has this ship called the Heart of Gold. It runs on the
Infinite Young album.
The Neil Young album.
Canadian Magic.
Right. I can play that song. It runs on what's called the Infinite Improbability Drive, where as things become more improbable, the ship becomes faster. And that, you know, the speed, it's so instead of saying we're traveling at warp 7.2 or warp 9.1, the ship is called, you know, traveling at a probability of 9,145,322 to 1 and falling. And it just runs on improbability. And then all these totally random things happen. Things that shouldn't actually happen in real life, like Arthur Dent gets pushed out an airlock and then... we should actually open that other beer because it kind of goes with this. But Arthur Dent gets pushed out of an airlock and the Heart of Gold picks them up. Why? Because it's incredibly improbable that they would be in the other one. I was thinking the other one.
Human life is based on phone numbers, I think it says in the book. Because the probability of them getting picked up was this number against one, but the number was the phone number of the apartment they were in when they were at the party where he meets Trillian and Zaphod.
Really?
Yes.
What? This is bullshit. You're making that up.
I read the shit yesterday, son.
What do you mean you heard some shit?
I read it yesterday.
I didn't pick up on the phone number being the same phone number, but...
It was saying, like, coincidentally, it was the... which was the probability of the apartment the phone number they were at the apartment when he met them. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this beer is called Spaced.
It smells very fruity.
Who got this one?
I got this.
I didn't get a fucking...
This smells like a... This smells like a Bath & Body Works. The store. Like,
this is an interesting... Did you read what this is? Stillwater Artisanal, which is just artist anal. I don't know if you ever realized.
No, that is entirely that.
I'm just seeing that right now. And if you like put like a line there, you just see water anal because they're on top of each other.
I feel that way a
which
lot.
Is a code for colonic. It's spaced a low gravity beer pun because gravity. Never mind. gravity is how much sugar is in the beer or the not even beer. Like when you boil your shit, you put all your shit in the pot and you boil it down. You measure the gravity of it, and gravity just tells you how much sugar is in there. And it's kind of like...
It's a John Mayer song.
Fuck. Yeah, except it's less douchey. A really high gravity beer. Douchey. The higher the gravity, the more sugar there is, the higher strength beer you could potentially make.
Because there's more sugar for the yeast to eat?
Precisely. So, when I made my Imperial Stout that you guys tried a couple weeks ago, I don't think we even recorded that, but... We drank a beer. I made the beer. Mm-hmm. We lived. So, it wasn't poison.
Weeks later, we're still alive.
I have no feet.
So, if any lawyers are listening, it was totally potable. That beer had like a gravity of like 1.13. It was like a fucking monster beer. This is a low gravity beer, it has like a gravity of like 1.03. Like, the lower that number is like 1.0000 is like tap water. What gravity measures is the amount of diluted or not diluted, like dissolved sugars and particles in the beer. And then when you put, so for a home brewer, when you make beer, you measure the gravity and you get a number, and then you put your yeast in, and the yeast does its shit where it eats up the sugar and shits out alcohol. And then you measure the gravity again, and then you see what changed, and there's a formula that will tell you the percent alcohol you have. So low gravity just really means low alcohol. So this is a low gravity beer. It's 3.8% alcohol.
Really?
That's... might be the weakest beer we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw it right on the floor.
But anyway, it's called Spaced.
Yeah, it is.
And Arthur Dent and Ford Prefect, they get literally pushed out in an airlock, as in they were spaced. But the ship...
Which is very different than docking with somebody.
And then the Heart friends. Of Gold picks them up. And then the Heart of Gold picks them up because it's incredibly improbable.
It's an IPA brewed with spelt and wheat. What the fuck is spelt?
It's smelt, spelled wrong.
I think it's like, I spelled that word before. I spelt it. Yeah, IPA. I spelt it. IPA. Thank you. Next word.
Spelt. Past and past participle of spelt.
No, it's wheat.
It's wheat.
It's dinkle wheat.
It's
dingleberries?
Or hulled wheat is a species of wheat cultivated since approximately 5,000 BC. Thank you, Wikipedia.
It looks like a bunch of nuts.
It does.
Oh, that's just what we need. Some fucking Mesopotamian wheat nonsense.
It's an ancient grain.
Ancient grains?
They sell this shit at Whole Foods for $8 an ounce.
I'm into ancient grainies. They never say no. Grannies, sorry. Oh, what do you think of the beer?
It's very, very light.
Compared to these really, really dark,
compared to the
heavy ones.
Super stout berry things, this is the opposite in every objective objective way. That's still a big word.
Yeah, the first two beers tasted like the night raped my mouth with a condom of raspberry, and this is as if I just gargled with a little bit of IPA. Was that not accurate? It's pretty intense, those beers, man.
They are.
I really liked them. You guys gave up. I'm like pouring more into my glass. I really liked them.
It's intense, man.
But that is what it tastes like.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus.
We drank that beer.
I missed that one.
That was
Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale, yeah.
That makes sense.
Sweet baby Jesus. There's so many more Jesus beers we could drink. Oh, we should do the New Testament. I mean, the book is really funny. And unfortunately for you, we're not as funny as that book. And if for us to repeat the jokes for you would be...
just sad.
It would also be vaguely plagiarism, we can go to court sort of thing. But
technically, this is free, so no.
That's true, but we also just wouldn't do it justice and we'd make it shitty. But there's funny stuff, like when the whale... and the improbability thing happens, they get pushed out of the airlock. the whale goes through this like crazy stream of thoughts of trying, like, where am I? What am I? What's happening?
Coming to terms with its own existence before it dies.
Yeah, like, and then, oh, what's this thing that's approaching me? And then it explodes like a fucking atomic bomb on the fucking ground.
With a bowl of petunias.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we really are not doing that justice, but it is absurd.
It's hard to really
absurd and funny.
Do any of the joke justice in and of themselves. They're part of a larger whole of absurdity.
Well, you know what? That's kind of the whole book. It's just the absurdity. Because what's the plot of the book?
Dude, Earth gets blown up and a guy goes on adventures and somehow lives.
Right, but it's not even like, I mean, that if you were to say that and it was like, oh, I'm reading this fucking Flash Gordon serial from 1949, that would sound applicable. Oh, this guy escapes from Earth.
No joke.
Oh, yeah. Flash, save you of the universe. Whatever that fucking shitty Queen song was.
That's exactly it, yeah.
So, the, suck a dick, Freddie Mercury. Not that I need to tell you, but it's... Oh, that's too soon? Too
soon? Dude, he didn't know.
He didn't know? Oh, is he just some sort of secretary going into Matt Lauer's office? He didn't know?
He was unaware.
Like, here
Matt
I am.
Lauer joke is like 6 years old at this point, man.
Going to the Sochi Olympics. What's happening here?
That
oh, Matt Lauer.
Ago.
What's happening? Why? You weren't thinking the same thing? There's really not much plot to the book.
It's almost as if, because the book is so absurd, that anything could happen. And because anything could happen, Arthur Dent is not in any real danger. I mean, he is, except he isn't, because the whole concept of the book is that it's so weird and obscure, so weird and absurd, that nothing matters. That's what I want to say. It's so bizarre that nothing matters. And so you're not super invested in the character.
I mean, I guess. That's what I but feel. Also, it's like, you don't have to be. I mean, you're in for the jokes. You don't think it's going to really get, like, serious.
But he kind of tries to.
Does he? Really?
I think so. I think when Douglas Adams makes some, like, what are they, hamsters? Spend
mice.
Spend 15 million years, or whatever the fuck it is. How many millions of years?
They are
hundreds of millions.
It's 10 million years.
10 million, yeah.
To figure out the answer to the question.
Figure out the question and the answer.
They figure out the answer first.
Yeah.
Because they say, here's the question. We want to know the meaning of life, the universe, and everything. He says, all right, go do this for 10 million years. And they scurry on their fucking gerbil wheels. And then they get the answer 42. And then he's like, what does that mean? It's like, oh, well, you didn't ask the question the right way. That's going to take another 15 or 20 million more years?
It's 10 million for the second one.
It's the same thing? Okay.
It's 7.5 million for the first question, for the answer.
For 42.
And then after 7.5 million, they say, it's 42, and they're like, shit, what's the question? It's like, oh, well, luckily I am designed to figure out the designs for the best computer to ever live, because I am the second best computer to ever exist. So I'll design for you the best one. And they make this computer. It's like, and this computer will be called Earth. And it's 10 million years of Earth. And 5 minutes before it solves the answer, they blow it up. And mice are pan-dimensional beings that exist in another dimension who leak into our universe and run experiments on humans.
Mm-hmm. You know, by running left in the maze sometimes and right in the maze.
Yeah, to teach us something about ourselves.
They're running experiments on the scientists.
Yeah.
It's not the scientists running the experiments on the mice. It's the other way around.
I think it's really funny because Adams is making fun of the hyper knowledge that scientists claim to have. They're like, oh, we understand everything about this thing. And then
Improbability Drive was created by a janitor or like a student. Basically like a Goodwill Hunting kind of thing. Whereas like a bunch of physicists had a big thing going on and he's like, what if we just did this? And like, it was so improbable that he would figure it out that in and of itself created the improbability drive or some weird chicken and the egg thing. And it's like, yeah, I guess in the context of this, that makes perfect sense.
It's just silly, lighthearted, goofy bullshit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is the king. He's the king of non sequiturs that are just dumb one-off jokes.
He really is. I think I've read now every one of his books. He doesn't have many. He has The Hitchhiker's Guide, which is like five books or so, depending on how you count. He has this book called The Meaning of Lif, which is this stupid bullshit book where they just, him and another author who is not nearly as famous, took a list of place names from originally the UK, but they might have expanded to other countries. You know, like a name of a city, and they said, oh, that city's name, oh, that sounds like, you know, they like find a city that's name is like Ruffsack, and like, and then the Ruffsack, noun, and like they pretend it's a word, Ruffsack, noun, when you don't moisturize your balls. Like that was like something like that. That's not an example from the book, but that kind of a thing. That's an entire book of just that, which I actually, I read by like every once in a while when I was taking a crap, I'd read.
I have no idea what to expect of this book based on that description.
He would just have, like, find the name. Like, you know, like, British places have weird names?
Yeah, they're very
like, weird. They're not called, like
Peniston and Scunthorpe?
Yeah, exactly. They'd be like, Scunthorpe. Like, that's a Scunthorpe is a slimy vagina that has a stinger. Like, I don't know, whatever it is. Like, oh, she's got a Scunthorpe. Like, ooh, no, not good.
So it's like a dictionary?
Yeah, but, like, of made-up words. Like, they just took words and then they
made it weird? It's like a British version of Devil's Dictionary, the Ambrose Bierce thing?
Sort of. Well, the Devil's Dictionary thing for Ambrose Bierce is that he took words and then made up, like, witty things explaining them, right? Like,
yeah.
Whereas here, it just took, like, a word that doesn't mean anything, and imagine if that was a word. It's kind of like that guy who, what's that, that columnist who said, let's find the most offensive definition of Santorum.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And it was a Santorum is like...
The frothy
dick shit. Oh, cum shit dick.
People can look it up themselves. It's...
Oh, we will spare you.
Google Santorum.
Mm-hmm. Like that kind of thing. Like, let's take this word that already exists and make a funny definition that goes with it. So he has Hitchhiker's Guide, that book, and then he has the two Dirk Gently books, which I've also read, which are funny.
Oh, I didn't know he wrote those.
Yeah, I mean, they're cool. I think it's also a show now, or
yeah, going to be a show. Yeah, it's like two or three seasons in.
It's only two books. I don't know how much they can get.
With Frodo in it.
Really? Frodo's that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Elijah Wood.
So, this is a guy who died, like, he died a while ago, like 2000, maybe 2001 or something. He's been dead a while, Douglas Adams. But Hitchhiker's Guide came out in, like, the 70s, like 78.
Yeah, it's old.
He really didn't write a lot. He has a handful of things. And they're all the same fucking thing. It's like this vague sketch of a plot that's stupid and trite. Hammer it with funny jokes that are really clever. Which is cool. It's entertaining. But there's not a lot of like, there's not a lot to like hang your hat on in terms of like what the fuck he accomplished as a writer.
It's a book full of one-liners.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. It's a little disappointing. I'm not disappointed in this fucking stout. I keep drinking this.
Mm-hmm. You do.
It's just abducting my taste buds. Oh, God. I'm going to regret that.
Yep.
Not the other beers I had before we recorded. I first read this book when I was in high school. I picked up the Hitchhiker's Guide Omnibus, which was like this thick-ass fucking doorstopper that had all five books and some like a short story or two or something like that in there. And I read them, I think I read about half of that. So I read the first three books or so. There's no plot. There's nothing that happens. It's just like more episodes.
There's a plot because stuff does happen, but it's all so silly and absurd.
Oh, when you mean when I say plot, I guess I'm trying to say something that leads towards a resolution. Something that leads towards an ending.
I mean, there's no real, I guess in terms of the old... was like there's no conflict that needs to be resolved. It's just they go out and do weird stuff, and then they do a different weird thing.
Is a conflict that needs to be resolved, but
which is
Arthur Dent is trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. It's almost like he wants to get home, but he can't because he doesn't have a home anymore. And then everyone else wants his brain because he's what's left of the 10 million-year-old
supercomputer. The brain thing for the other books.
So at the very end of the first one, they talk about how.
At the very end of the first book, but like the next,
they do
three
continue
or four
that.
Books. They continue that.
Well, they continue it a bit because Arthur is the only thing left of the 10 million-year-old supercomputer that came up that was supposed to come up with the answer.
I mean, except trillion
to the question, the answer to the question, to the question to the answer of the life of the universe and everything. And so they're trying to, you know, take away...
Take his brain.
Take his brain. And Arthur's, of course, saying, no, you can't have my brain. And, you know, the weird planet people are saying, no, well, don't worry, we'll just replace it with something. And there's a funny little thing about what they're going to replace it with.
Is there a reason they can't take it from Trillium?
She was, yes.
She I mean, was, it's stupid. She was away from Earth for a while.
She was away from Earth for so a little bit too long before the end. So
all the science is out of her brain.
Yeah, exactly. She did, just wouldn't work. Obviously.
Which is totally how in the science of fiction novels work.
In the scheme of this, yeah.
In the scheme of every science fiction novel.
It's everything has a reason, and they explain it with sense, be like, all right, I guess it makes sense now.
Well, that's... one of the reasons for that is that so many of the science fiction novels of the 50s and 60s that Douglas Adams was referring to were kind of written one at a time, or even sometimes chapters at a time, by the various authors. You know, whether it be your big-name guys like Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov, or your nobodies, they just kind of, oh, I'm going to write another chapter about some bullshit about a scientist, astronaut guy on Venus. And chapter 74. And they take some bullshit. And then they'd realize, oh, wait, that contradicts something that happened in chapter 19. Here we go. And then he discovered the amulet of whatever, which allowed him to do this. And they just say one sentence answer, and now I can totally disregard that kind of thing.
There are, like, whole paragraphs in this book where he, like, strings together bullshit science words, like, obviously as a joke.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And it's just like, all right, yeah.
I mean, Adams was a smart fucking dude and clever, and I think he wrote, like, Doctor Who novels or Doctor Who novelizations or Doctor Who scripts or something. He had something to do with Doctor Who in the 80s. You know, that's, like, super, on the one hand, like, super British, but also...
The most British you could be.
Yeah, besides being the Queen herself.
It's not even that British. Like, the Queen is not as British as Doctor Who.
Well, no, because
the queen will die, but Doctor Who will live forever.
Well, the Queen will regenerate into another lizard person.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's a separate issue.
But the doctor will regenerate into a lady doctor, which means OBGYN, I guess. I don't know. What's happening on the new Doctor Who?
What?
She's going to be a lady, yeah.
It's a lady doctor.
Yeah. Jodie Whittaker. It's going to be great.
Oh, okay.
The new doctor's
a woman. Take your word for it.
Like, the doctor is like...
I've never watched Doctor Who, so...
It's a fucking dude, or it has always been. Ooh. The joke I was trying to make doesn't really work now that I've explained it. But for the first 47,000 years of Doctor Who, it was some guy, and then whenever that guy either died a premature death or left the show, they'd be like, all right, we don't want to keep this show going, so we're going to get a guy that looks just like him, that we get out of focus in the background, and then he goes and transforms into a new form because he's an alien, and that's what they do. And then you get the second doctor.
It's a great plot device.
Oh, it's brilliant.
You can milk that forever.
And as they have, yeah.
It's been great. I love Doctor Who. I haven't seen any of the old ones.
Oh, they're
terrible.
Horrific.
We did go see the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of one of the old Doctor Who's, where the guys make fun of it. And it's terrible. It is just garbage. New ones are pretty cool. But also still corny, because they still have the same, like... made-up science words. They can say, this is how this works. I'm like, all right, cool, man.
Mm-hmm. I'll use the frontometer. Oh, all right.
That's probably a real thing.
Let me tell you, I've watched early Doctor Who, first Doctor, once. Now, this new lady, I don't know her name, is she Doctor 13?
She is the 13th Doctor, yeah.
Has that started yet?
No, not yet.
So, I watched the ninth Doctor. I watched all those episodes. Was that David Tennant?
It was Eccleston.
Oh, Eccleston, yeah.
Yeah.
And then 10th was David Tennant. I watched that, and I watched...
The 11th was Matt Smith.
I didn't watch that. I watched, like, random old shit from, like, the 4th and 5th Doctors. Like, oh, let's go watch this guy with a fucking celery stick on his shirt.
Oh, the celery guy. Yeah, that was a weird one.
That was the 5th Doctor, yeah.
British people are weird.
And he had a cricket jersey on. Why not? The day before my nuptials, my wife... stayed with her parents that night, and I was like, "Oh, I have this is my last night to myself.
Better watch this old Doctor Who."
I mean, I couldn't masturbate all night, so I then put on Netflix. And I was like, "Let's find something that my wife is never gonna ever fucking watch, and I'm gonna be married, and she's gonna pick the shows for the next rest of my life." Oh, let me watch this first Doctor Who, and I was like, "Oh, Doctor Who and the Aztecs, 1964." I'm like, play. And it was this black and white shit. It looked like it was a surveillance camera in the 60s. Yeah. And it was horrendous. And then I passed out. And the next thing I know, I was getting married. It didn't really work out. So I think they're total dog shit, those early ones. But once they got to the point where computer CGI kind of crap was cheap enough that they could do it on a
reasonable scale.
I got this show's pretty solid. You know what's also gonna be solid? All right, we have one more beer. Nate, what do we got here?
Oh, all right, this is called Galactica Double IPA.
Jimmy's favorite. This is by.
Though it looks like it has Peter Pan on the front. No,
I guess that's Michael Jackson.
No, it's some futuristic lady. It just looks like green and flying like Peter Pan.
I'm not sure what that's supposed to be.
It's fucking lame, Samus. This is by Clown Shoes Brewing Company.
Made with real shoes.
I've had a few of their beers. They have some fucking weird kind of stuff. And this is... I can't read and pour. That's silly.
It smells like an IPA.
Tastes like one, too.
The lady on the front is holding a little stick that the ends are hops.
Mm. Is it a metaphor?
It's like a hop staff.
It's just hops, man.
Galactic hop staff.
I mean, that makes sense.
8% alcohol. Where is Clown Shoes from? Ipswich, Mass. What the fuck is Ipswich? Just outside Boston. Just say that. Right?
Well, everything's just outside Boston.
Then there you go. That's what you that was a softball then, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's not good.
So what do you guys think?
I mean, it's good. It's definitely stronger than the spaced, than the low gravity.
Oh, that was some still water. No gravity bullshit. There's like interesting flavor to this. Something almost oily.
Oily?
That's not the right word. Smooth. Like very smooth means something else with drinking. Velvety? I don't know. It's just kind of like...
I kind of know what you mean.
I can't find the right adjective for it. It's good. It's not my favorite, but it's good. There's very little smell relative to taste.
Yeah. The taste is pretty strong. But
the taste is intense, but the smell is kind of means they did not dry hop it properly.
It's an IPA.
It's a borderline double IPA. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get past anything after these abduction beers.
Yeah.
Which just fucking did things to our bodies.
Sullied me.
Yeah, and just orally probed us.
I don't like IPAs.
Do you want to have the raspberry
I'm good.
Raspberry butt probe in your mouth?
I don't want that either.
I want bed. I want bed now, please. Please let me go. So Jimmy was a hitchhiker we just picked up, and we didn't...
made him, please, drink
call
beer.
For help.
You're going to talk about these books, goddammit.
I will be dead long before Matt Lauer goes to jail.
Faster than those ladies or that lock click behind them. Yeah, just... What was that? Remember that? What was that? That was last year now. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That was 2017.
Feels like it was this week.
Time is weird.
Whoa.
Well, since we're talking about this new year, you got any New Year's resolutions for books and shit?
Well, so I think... Because, you know, we're a book club and we want people to read books. I think we should encourage our listeners to make their New Year's resolution to read a lot of books. Or do what we do and make a goal of a number. Make an account on Goodreads and, like, put in your, you know, reading goal for the year. And it's a good way to keep track of it.
I think, I agree, 100%. This is now the fourth year I've done that with Goodreads or something like that?
It's only the third for me.
I have never done it.
That's because you don't read books, you dummy.
I read a lot of books, sometimes.
I'll tell you right now, I did reading challenges. Well, this is the fifth year. Well, this will be the sixth year that I'm using Goodreads to do to keep track of my reading. And the past couple of years, I've used Goodreads to do the reading challenge that they have every January. And I find that to be a really good method to kind of
motivate. Is it just like a challenge for like number of books, or they give you like
lists? It's numbers of books. So you put in, I want to read X number of books this year, and you can put whatever number you want. You put 5, you can put 20. For the last 4 years, I put 100. And it'll kind of give you, whenever you log in on Goodreads, it'll give you a thing. Like on the side panel, you'll see, you know, where you have your currently reading. And then underneath, it's like, you have read 7 out of 100 books or whatever.
You are three books ahead.
Yeah, it'll tell you how you are. If you were like just dividing the year amongst whatever number you want,
pace.
It'll say, oh, you're on pace, you're behind pace, you're ahead of pace. So it's really cool. I think the thing that really helps is to have to have Goodreads friends that are also doing it, because then you could see, like, oh, fuck, that guy read another book and I haven't read shit yet. I better get on that. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. Mm. So, Nate and I have a sort of healthy competition with that.
Yep.
Just some of us cheat. It's cool. But, yeah. So, that's cool. And it's like, oh, fuck, Nate read that book? I just read that book. Or, Nate's reading that book? Fuck, I haven't read that book, but I want to. God damn it, now I have to read that book.
Mm-hmm. Ruin everything, Nate.
I think kind of. I'd like to imagine it goes both ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Because there's a lot of times like where I read a book and then, or he reads a book and then I read it, or you know, vice versa. But it's good to have a friend on there to kind of spur your reading.
Mm-hmm. To judge you.
Well, sort of. Well, it's not just like you judge. They don't judge you because it's not like Facebook where they're like posting to you so much. Mm. But it's you judging you.
Someone to hold you accountable.
A little bit, yeah. Well, what'd you end up with for 2017, Nate?
Well, I'm going to end up at just about 100.
If it's not a mystery to you, listener, we are recording a few days before this is released.
Yeah, but so I'm not almost there. We'll see, but it'll be just about 100.
I'm going to end up at 110, but, you know, I need to brag. I need to show.
But I originally, at the beginning of 2017, made my goal as 50.
Yeah, you could revise it mid-year.
I revised it from 50 up to 75, and then to up to 85, and then up to 100. So, you know, I started out the year definitely kind of low, but not reading that many. Partly because the problem is, there just aren't that many books I'm interested in anymore. Once you burn through 100 at a time, then you sort of really have to work to figure out what books am I interested in.
So for those of you who have ever seen a library with your eyes, you know that Nate's full of shit.
It's not books. No. It's not books that are out there. It's books that I'm interested in.
I feel like there still are plenty. It's just that I at least speak for myself, I guess. There are plenty of books I'm interested in that I don't actually want to spend the time reading. Mm. Like, where I'm like, oh, a book about the Yugoslavian Civil War. I don't know fucking shit about that. That sounds interesting. Oh, 900 pages. Fuck you. No, thank you. Wikipedia, it is.
The one thing about putting a really high number as a goal on Goodreads is it makes you not want to read long books.
For sure. It makes you more likely to try to cheat, especially when you get towards... whenever Goodreads is like, oh, you're 6 books behind schedule. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck, let me go find some short bullshit.
You better get all those old goosebumps out.
Yeah, totally. Oh, look at that. Here's a 17-page pamphlet that counts as a book. I'm gonna read you, motherfucker. How'd you do this year, Jimmy?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't do any of these challenges.
Oh.
I didn't know that really was a thing.
Well, that's because you lost. That's
why. Yeah, man, objectively, not even close to 100. Not even 50, probably. But more than average.
You know, 50 is one book a week.
More than average, dude.
Yeah, well, then I'm well above average.
You know, something like 40% of adults never pick up a book.
If I had
like 40%
of
people
like,
never
yes,
read a book after
I
high
would,
school.
I would say probably in the 30 to 50 range, but I don't know.
Hey, 30 to 50 is respectable.
That's a very
that's
large
like
number.
A book or so, a book every week and a half.
I feel like that's about it.
I think that's
I read a few real long ones. I got into a bunch of real long sci-fi books, and those really bogged me down, but I didn't want to... I mean, I'm not going to go for like... numbers if it's like shit I don't care about.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. And that's the one complaint I have about the Goodreads challenge is that you put number of books so you could, as Nate was saying too, you can kind of, you don't want to read big books so you'll pick a bunch of short shit or you'll avoid big books. There should be another option to just put page length. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I want to read 15,000 pages this year, which actually isn't a whole lot. But you know, you're going to read 15,000 pages.
It would be very different.
Because then you might be like, oh, let me go read a whole bunch of big books. And you maybe only read, you know, 19 books over the course of the year, but you get your goal.
Yeah.
Whereas if you put, I want to read 30 books, you're never going to want to read
those big things.
Well,
I could bang out all of the Curious George series in a day. It doesn't make me a good reader.
I mean, it makes you curious.
I mean, you have to be curious to get into that.
Do you have a goal for this year? For 2018, the future. Today, in the past.
I mean, yeah, if it wasn't for the podcast, I'd probably start out the year at 50 again. But, you know, we're going to do a lot of books just for the podcast. So, you know, I'll probably do around, maybe I'll put it at 75. Maybe I'll put it at 100.
Well, hey, and if we keep our breakneck pace of podcasting, and don't die of cirrhosis, we'll get 52 books before this year is over.
Yeah. And I'm going to read other stuff, too, so then it definitely needs to be more than 50.
Yeah. So, 75? I have done 4 years in a row of 100 books.
How many of them do you remember?
All of them. Test me. I really, I mean, do you want me to tell you the titles?
No, but I mean, like, if you, like, 100 books, do you have 2 a week, yeah?
Yeah, just about. Like, little shot.
Do you remember them very well?
Every single detail? Certainly not.
No, not every single detail, but, like, certain books I've read, even just a few years ago, were just like, man, I don't remember a lot of this.
Regardless of if it, I've noticed that, because I only really became a heavy reader, like, 7, 8 years ago now, and the first couple of years it was, like, reading... It's like 15 books, then like 30 books. And after I read any particular book, me personally, I'll remember a lot of it for, you know, 6 months. Where you're like, oh, you remember that character in the book? Like, oh yeah, that like obscure thing that happens in that part of the book. And that was weird. And I'll remember all sorts of weird details. And as time goes on, that shit fades away. And then I'll just kind of remember like the gist of the book. You know, the plot, the main characters' names.
That's normal.
That's all I get. And then after, and once that kind of fades away, I'm left with just like an impression of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh yeah, that book was that weird thing about this thing that happened that was fucking confusing. That's the best I can do after a while, you know? I might remember one or two very specific things about a book, but it diffuses.
I think like the last 2 or 3 weeks I reread To Kill a Mockingbird, and I think I read it when I was younger, but I honestly did not remember a single fucking thing about that book. When I read it, it was like, this is all new to me.
Was it 15 years? 20 years?
I don't know. I honestly, maybe I never read it.
You're not going to remember all those details.
I remembered literally zero details. Like, it was almost like I'd never read it before, which is possible that I never read it before.
It is possible.
But if you're burning out 100 books a year...
The only way I try to push myself is that... When I'm kind of tired or kind of bored, I'm like, let me go read another chapter of that book. And that intention over the course of a year ends up pushing me a little farther and farther ahead. It started off several years ago. My goal was to read a book a week. It was 52 books a year. And I ended up reading like 78 books or something like that year. Because I was like, oh, I want to read a book a week, right? And then in the first week, start January 1st. And by like January 4th, I read a book. It's like, well, I read another book because I finished the book. And it compounded, and I got to 77. I was like, well, I wasn't really trying to get to 77. What happens if I try to get to 100? And I got to 100 the next year, and I've done that now several years in a row, and I think that's a good number for me. And I guess 104 would be a really nice number, because that's exactly 2 a week, but not every week is the same, you know? Like,
every book is the same length.
They're wildly different.
That's true. But even the first year that I read 100 books, I read some big monsters. That was the year I read Infinite Jest.
That's 6 months by itself.
That's 3 weeks. 3 weeks just, like, hurting my retina.
I mean, I remember when I first got back into reading a lot, like, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. And, like, my second book, maybe third, back into it was Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me fucking months.
Because it's a fucking big monster.
It's
dick
a
of a book.
Giant. And it was great. And I loved it. And it was great. But it was just like, man, maybe I should have like started off a little easier.
Well, that's one of the things about books, right? Like, if you had, sometimes you wish you had somebody to kind of curate for you, you know? Like, you're like, oh, I'm really interested in this topic or this kind of thing. And it'd be nice if somebody could say, oh, well, here's this author. You should read this one first. And then when you graduate up to this person, and you know, they set a sort of thing for you. But it just doesn't exist. You kind of have to do it by trial and error.
Because you're not going to like the same things other people are going to like. So it just doesn't work very well. I would also say don't try to read just the most serious books. Or don't try to read just the classics or just the canon. You know, just the most famous books.
For a while, I was like, I gotta break it up.
Read some of those. Then read some like shorter, lighter, fun things. And then read other things, and then read a science book, and then read something that's funny, and then read something that, you know, just read lots of different things, then read a mystery, and then read,
don't read all of Jane Austen at once.
Yeah, don't do that. They'll all, if you do that, ever. They'll all just, like, run together in your head. You won't even remember which one is which. If you try and read all of Jane Austen in 2 weeks, that just won't come out. It won't work out.
You'll also be very bored.
Yeah, that there's that too. You know, if you have, if you read a variety of different things, then you'll get a lot more done.
Yeah, and it makes you appreciate things. It's like a sort, you know, different books will act as a palate cleanser. You know? Mm-hmm,
yeah.
If you spend a month on a really heavy book, that's a big book that like just weighs on you, and then you go read, you know, one or two light, silly things, kind of prepares you to read another bigger book. So your goal is here 75. I'm going to stick to the 100. Do you have a goal, Jimmy? Did we ask? Do you give a number? I'm going to push you.
I don't have a goal. I'll say 50 just for the sake of having a goal, but I don't expect to hit it. But I figure that's good enough. I want to keep going. I mean, I burned through the classics that I felt like I missed out on, and at this point, I'm just taking them as they come. So,
yeah, I think Nate's advice about like don't just read the classics or don't just read whatever is really good, because if you go like, oh, I'm going to read the 1001 novels you need to read. Those are...
I looked at those lists and I was like, man, I don't want to read 90% of these.
Oh, yeah, most of them sound like garbage. Most of them are really upsettingly bad. But they're also just, even if you are interested in them, they're just the kind of thing that, for me at least, you can't do that in a row.
Not all of them.
You need to try something
too heavy.
Or just too heavy in content, or too heavy in language, or too heavy in length. There's something about each one of those books where like, yeah, this took a toll. I need to get out and go read a book about titties.
Hitchhikers is probably on that list for all those, you know, 1,000.
Oh yeah, totally.
100%. But most of them are not like this.
For sure.
There's not a lot of comedy books on that list.
Virtually none. You get much more shit where it's like, oh, and here is another...
All of Dostoevsky and Tolstoy. Like, alright, I feel like killing myself this year.
When the 1001 novels you should read before you die book came out, like... Every Dickens book was on it. Do I need to read every Dickens book?
No. None.
To get the gist? Guy like Christmas. I got it. I heard about that.
Man, you mentioned it in passing.
Alright, so The Hitchhiker's Guide. Let's go back to that. Let's just like sum that up and let's get the fuck out of here. Fun book. Fucking silly.
Yep.
I feel like by itself, which really isn't enough, you gotta kind of have to read a whole bunch of them. You have to read the series practically.
Like, it is a series, but each one is so short that it's... You can get through them all pretty easy.
And no single book ends satisfyingly. We're like, oh, I could just stop there.
You read the first... Book one is like a very long first chapter.
Yeah, totally. Like
a prologue.
Yeah, it ends in like, all right, let's go to the universe... Let's go to the... what is it?
The restaurant at the end of the universe.
Thank you, yeah. And then, oh, yeah, let's go over there. Oh, what's book two called? There it is, the universe, the restaurant at the end. I can't even fucking say it.
The restaurant at the end of the universe.
Oh, goddamn.
I think that it is probably the best of its genre. Of just goofy shit. I think a lot of people have tried to be as goofy as it since it came out. Those books, what they are, I don't know. But I know they exist.
For sure.
All right.
Can't top that, though.
Yeah. Tell us what you thought.
Tweet us at DrunkGuysBC or send us an email at
DrunkGuysBookClub@gmail.com
or check out our website at
DrunkGuysBookClub.com.
And be sure to leave us a review. Whatever you're going to leave us, just round it up to 5 stars. It'll give you good karma in the new year. And good luck with your New Year's reading resolution. We will see you next week when we are going to read
The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway.
All right. Thanks for listening.